and welcome back to Community Radio's first locally produced show 9 years ago.
Our community radio.
Yes. This community radio's first. We're talking this hour with Travis Brown, former fire chief and current, he runs the Southern New Mexico State Fair and also the fairgrounds, right?
I don't run the fairgrounds. Okay. They're owned and operated by Doniana County.
Okay.
We just rent them for our annual event.
Okay. I thought maybe you were doing that too. And John Hunter of the Historical Society. And the basic subject is the county's going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our nation. How? What are we going to do? Where, when?
Well, it's going to take place June 30th through July 2nd, so that's next week, right around the corner. It's going to be at the fairgrounds, and it's going to be from 4 p.m. each day. It'll go till 10 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday, June 30th and July 1st, until midnight on July 2nd. So those are the hours. It's open to the public. It's going to be a fantastic event, and just lots of entertainment, lots of activities, community groups there promoting what they're doing. John can talk about what the Historical Society is going to be doing. We're very pleased to have them there and participating. So it's just an opportunity for the community to come out, learn a little bit, hopefully maybe, about America and our history, as well as enjoy just a great community event.
We'll ask you in a bit about some of the other community entities that'll be there. But, John, what are you guys going to do?
Well, the Doniana County Historical Society is going to have a place there, maybe a couple booths, where our goal is not to teach people about history. We're there to help people have fun about the past. So it's interactive stuff. We're going to make paper hats, tri-corner paper hats for the kids. So just imagine kids running around the fairgrounds with these brown and black tri-corner hats as if it's a revolutionary period. We're going to be reading aloud the Declaration of Independence, or at least parts of it. Not the whole thing, but parts of it, and invite the public to also read parts of it. That's what we're all about. It's this founding of the first modern democracy in the world. We also will have the a facsimile of the Declaration, where people can sign it and take it with them. So it's for the public to sign and to commit to themselves to this independence. We'll have some suffragists there, who are in their white clothes and advocating for equality for women. We'll have a map of the world where you can put a pin where your ancestors came from, so we can kind of get an idea of what made this country, at least this county. Yeah. What else are we going to have? There'll be Anita's going to. She's a farmer in the valley, and she's going to bring a thing that she has, which is seeds that then turn into plants, and ask especially for children, what plant will this seed grow? So it's kind of this right. This game. When I read the Declaration of Independence, I'm going to have a bell and pretend that this declaration just came in from Philadelphia. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. So we'll be doing some living history and some play acting. A guy by the name of Jim is going to read parts from Patrick Henry. Read that. I'm looking for some quotes from Thomas Paine. So to try to get into the spirit of what people were doing and thinking about 250 years ago to help create this this great country of ours.
I'm thinking about the Declaration of Independence, and everybody knows, we hold these truths to be self-evident. But are there parts further down that you think are more important that people kind of miss when they think about that document?
Well, there's parts of it that say at the very beginning, The very first sentence, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human affairs it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal status, a station to which the laws of nature and of nature's gods entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind, requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident. So that's actually, we hold these truths to be self-evident, is not,
not
the very
the start.
First. It's not the start.
I'll tell you what, that's some good writing there.
Yeah. And then there's some, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, some more of that. And then there's 27 things that they say the king and the parliament have done that have broken the bond.
Yes.
So I don't think we'll read all of those. But, you know, there's some other stuff in there, too, that I think people would find interesting.
How I'm just curious, of the 27 things that we were complaining about then, I assume those are all, a lot of those are things that are relevant to us still today, things like taxes and I guess quartering armies not so much, but
a lot of it was that the king has, and this is actually really pointed at the king.
Right.
He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of pressing importance unless suspended in operation till his assent should be obtained. That's just one of them. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly. He has made judges dependent on his will alone. Mm. So
isn't a lot of it the sense that Englishmen had rights by then, and had a parliament, and had somewhat of a democracy under a king, and that he was basically depriving these colonists, because they didn't happen to live in England, of the rights of Englishmen.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And that was part of their main complaint, was that they're Englishmen. I mean, When the soldiers, the English soldiers, went out from Boston and attacked Lexington and Concord, Paul Revere didn't go running saying, the English are coming. It's like everybody was English. Well, not everybody, but most of the people were English, right? It wasn't. It was the redcoats are coming.
Yep.
So people considered themselves English, most of the people, and making that break was hard for a lot of people. The estimate is that maybe a third of the people during the Revolution were revolutionaries, mm-hmm. a third were loyalists, and a third basically said, "I don't have a pony in this. I don't have a dog in this fight. Just let me do my life." But there was this strong belief that everybody was an Englishman in the colonies, and that they should be governed by the laws that English people were governed in the British Isles.
Yeah. Yep. Travis, how much of what you're doing with your celebration are you trying to connect to not make it a schoolroom kind of thing where you're feel like you're being forced, but a fun kind of learning type of experience?
Well, we're doing the best we can. The goal, at least my role in it, has been to try to provide more of the festival aspect of it, celebration part of it. We're going to have displays from White Sands Missile Range. The National Guard's going to be there. We're going to have other. We've hopefully going to have some other. Either veteran groups there. So we're trying to provide an opportunity for recognition of some of the institutions that have certainly played a role in our history, try to give those organizations an opportunity to come out and reach out to the public, perform whatever services they have to offer, to provide experiences, education, as they see fit. So I think we're more just trying to provide the venue and the opportunity and not so much focused on what the specific messaging is or what the specific groups are going to be doing, just more creating an environment that will draw people out with some activities and things that they can do as a family and enjoy. And then hopefully while they're there, they can get exposed to groups such as John and some of these others to perhaps learn a little bit more about our nation and its history.
Right. And did you give the hours? I missed it if you did.
It's going to start at 4 p.m. each day.
Okay.
It will go to 10 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's June 30th and July 1st. And then we'll go to midnight on July 2nd.
And tell folks where it is, because not everybody's there.
So it's at the Doniana County Fairgrounds, where the Southern New Mexico State Fair is held. That's about 12, 13 miles west of town. The other really exciting thing is there's going to be a drone show each night, roughly about 9:30, so between 9:30 and 10 is kind of the target range after it gets dark enough that it's going to be very visible. Not a whole lot of auxiliary lights out there in that area, so it should be a nice dark sky. And each night it's actually going to be a different show, so don't think that, oh, if I saw it the first night, I'm going to see the same thing. There's actually a different storyboard each night, so come out and watch it all three nights. They're pretty spectacular.
So you're going to have drones instead of fireworks?
That's correct. Yeah. Yes. That was a decision that the county made for a couple of different reasons. One's that, you know, the city does their fireworks annually, and so didn't want to do anything to try to take away from their celebration. And also, though, for some people, fireworks do have, although they're beautiful and most folks love them, for some folks, the sound and those things not as enjoyable. And so this was intended to be an opportunity that might be a little bit more agreeable to everybody.
I know this is off topic, but as the former fire chief, this time of year bust the truth and you crazy back then.
When I was a firefighter, we loved it because it was the busiest day of the year, and working the 4th of July was awesome, you know, when you were gung-ho because it was just call. As time went on, and then when I was in the fire marshal's office and I had to be out unfortunately enforcing the fireworks regulations and writing citations and those things, it wasn't near as much fun. Hopefully everybody has a safe, enjoyable 4th of July. It's, you know, extremely dry. There's follow the safety regulations. That's really the biggest thing and that's what we always tried to share. And I'm sure that's a message that both the county fire department and Las Cruces fire department is still pushing out to the public. If you follow the regulations and do what you have been asked to do, only use permissible fireworks, and then you should have a safe, enjoyable 4th of July, and we can enjoy fireworks.
Right.
So, John, when you were a professor at New Mexico State, right?
Right.
And history?
Yeah, history and public history.
So what is public history?
Well, I was working mainly with students who wanted to be historians but didn't want to teach in the classroom. So they wanted to do history out in the community, preserving historic buildings, recording oral histories of people of the community, but also working in museums like the Farm and Ranch Museum or the Brannigan Cultural Center, places like that. I worked for National Parks as a historian. The National Park, I think, is the biggest federal bureaucracy that hires historians. I'm working in archives, so there's a lot of job opportunities for historians, not just in the classroom. And for me, that was great because it got me outside of off the campus and into the community and doing these very interesting projects. And, you know, one thing that I found was that working with the public, I always learned something new. It was like I came in thinking, oh, I know the history of Mesilla. No, I don't. Just talking with people. And it allowed me also to work with the J. Paul Taylor family.
Mm-hmm.
So when they donated their home on the Plaza of Mesilla to the state to eventually become a museum, I was there pretty early on and did an oral history of all of the Taylor family, which was very interesting, and then helped with the transition from a private home to a public facility.
Obviously, all of the attention is going to be focused on, you know, what was taking place in Boston and in the colonies 250 years ago. But I'm curious, what was happening out here in the New Mexico Territory when all that was going on?
Well, of course, the There was a European colony in New Mexico before there was a European colony in Virginia.
Spanish, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things we do at the Doñana County Historical Society, we do field trips. And last month we had a field trip to the Praje San Diego, which is the campsite on the Camino Real on the southern edge of the Jornada de Muerto. So as people were going north, they would stop there and gather themselves a bit, get some water, make sure their equipment and their animals were good. And before they made the 90-mile dash across the Jornada de Muerto where there was no water. Mm-hmm. When we had the field trip a month ago, I asked them, what was going on here in 1776? So there were people here in 76, of course, Apaches, but also Spanish. There was a lot of activity up and down the Camino Real. And then up in Santa Fe, of course, that was a settlement all throughout northern New Mexico. And it was a viable part of New Spain. So did they know what was going on the East Coast? Of course not.
Yeah, right.
Of course not. Yeah. But if you think about it, then that independence ideal, this ideal of having a representative government for yourselves that isn't mediated through royalty or aristocracy, that idea spread from the East Coast to Mexico, mm-hmm. who gained its independence in 1820, and then throughout all of Latin America. And today, 80 countries around the world are democratic. And I just trace that right back to what was going on. So people didn't know in New Mexico what was going on in 1776 and with the American Revolution, but the waves emanated out and spread out and have changed the world. Of course, we do have about 90 oligarchies around the world.
So
we still have more oligarchies than democracies. Mm. But still, I think it's something to be really proud of, that spark that was lit in Concord and then with the war spread all throughout the East Coast eventually has inspired people around the world.
I think people nowadays lose sight of how, I don't want to say revolutionary, but how startling and new that idea was, in the sense that the Brits and Chinese, everybody had an emperor or a king in charge and assumed by everybody to have been put in charge by God, and therefore, if not infallible, at least somebody who had to be obeyed, and not only because he had a military, though obviously that contributed. But can you talk about that? I mean, it seems to have been something, an idea that certainly took hold and flowered.
Well, it was a revolutionary idea for the time, for the 18th century, but it wasn't totally new. I mean, mm-hmm. ancient Greeks had a democracy. At least some of the city-states had democracies. But it was different. And even today, democracies are different around the world. There's different ways that people say, okay, we want to govern ourselves, and this is how we think we should do it with our people and with our
Iceland.
Culture.
Iceland actually preceded us, too.
Iceland as a democracy? Oh, yeah, right. The ting or whatever that was called, right.
Yeah, look, it's spelled like it means thing, but ting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Thingvetlar.
But certainly not as inspirational, all due respect, to Iceland.
No.
I mean, I was talking earlier about how impressed I was with the writing. I'm just curious, when you see other countries forming new democracies, how often have they borrowed from the language of that document?
Well, that document has inspired. It was written mainly by Thomas Jefferson, although other people contributed to it as well. But then from there, and let me see, I think Thomas Paine then wrote something called The Rights of Man, And that inspired the French, and he actually went over to France and was part of their revolution. And then they they wrote the Rights of Man that is similar to our Declaration, but it's a bit different. It is a masterful piece of writing. Thank you, Thomas Jefferson. But as I said, it's inspired a lot of different people around the world.
Yeah. This is obscure, and just spend just a moment on it. But have you seen the new book that's out that basically credits a British royal, not royal, but a British aristocrat, who is actually kind of a mentor to Thomas Paine? There's certainly some basis for this, but the biographer kind of credits him more than anybody here for our revolution.
Well, and as a historian, I read what people say from the past in their speeches, what they said in the past. And it's amazing how somebody can talk for 2 hours and they're pulling quotes from the ancient Greeks and the Romans and the French philosophers, and they don't have notes, but that's how they were educated. Mm-hmm. At least some people were educated and moved up into places of governance. I'm just really amazed at how literate some of the people were back then.
Yeah. Peter and I were talking earlier about the two-party system and what the founders would have thought about that. I think obviously, they could have no idea what would happen 250 years later. But how much have we clung to that, their original, and how far have we gone astray from it?
Well, first of all, originally, George Washington didn't think we should have parties, individual parties.
No.
So pretty quickly we did. So things change even from the revolutionary people. I mean, things changed even during their lifetimes. And I think that's one of the strengths of our Constitution, is that it allows change. In our democracy, all people aren't created equal. That's an ideal that we aspire to. But women didn't have the vote until 1920.
Yeah.
So we have these documents that are our founding documents, but they do recognize that what was true 250 years ago isn't true anymore. And fortunately, I think we have a constitution that allows for that that change to happen.
And a lot of people have speculated on how Jefferson could have written that. All men are created equal at the same time that he knew, must have known. that
he owned slaves.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. He said all men.
That's what I was saying. So when I said knew and I came to must have known, I stopped. Well, maybe he doesn't think of them as men.
Right.
People didn't.
Yeah.
Some people didn't. And some people didn't. And, back then there was what was called the coverture law, which is that a wife had no right to own anything.
Right.
And if they separated from their husband, the wife, the husband took the children.
It's amazing how late there was any, woman could have a bank account and that kind of thing.
Couldn't have a bank account.
It's amazing how long into our history that persisted.
Yeah.
Well, Abigail Adams, who was the wife of President Adams, she wrote a couple years before she died, she wrote her will. That was illegal because back then she didn't own anything. So how could she write a will? Mm. But her defiance against this coverture was that she was going to write a will. And her husband, of course, abided by her wishes when she did die. But that was an illegal act that she did.
We are almost at the bottom of the hour. I should let people know that you're listening to KTALLP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. We're talking with John Hunter and Travis Brown about the upcoming 250th anniversary celebration. And Travis, obviously at the fairgrounds, you guys do it up for 4th of July every year, but when you have a milestone like this, you take a one-day event and you turn it into something a little bit more.
Well, this actually is the first time that the county has sponsored something along these lines.
So the
city, for many years, has done their 4th of July celebration, which includes the Electric Light Parade on July 3rd, and concert and fireworks show on July 4th, and that is still taking place, which is one of the reasons the county is doing their event June 30th through July 2nd to provide a greater opportunity for our residents in the area during the 4th and not to directly compete with what the city. Correct. So now they have pretty much 5 days worth of activities and fun and just good community events that they can participate in. And the county just felt like with it being the 250th, it was something that they wanted to get involved in and help celebrate and promote. So this is the first time event, and very excited to see how it all turns out and what it does. And this is amazing. I'm sitting here listening to you guys talk about history and because I'm certainly learning a lot to take with me. So this is fantastic, and hopefully a lot of the community will have the opportunity to have a similar experience through all the activities that are taking place over the course of next week.
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
Well, I was just going to say, since you're here, let's digress for a moment, talk about the Southern New Mexico State
Fair. I'm always willing to do that,
as we have done
for sure.
On other occasions.
Sure.
But tell folks who have never been there, don't know anything about it, what is it? Why might they enjoy going there?
We're talking about the Southern New Mexico State Fair.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually our 60th event this year. So we are trying to promote it a little bit more, celebrate it a little bit more. And it's something that we feel is the biggest and best community family event that's still taking place within Doniana County and really this region. You know, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of our other events. And so it's an opportunity to come out to experience some great fun, to learn a little bit about agriculture, Western heritage, see what is taking place new that's happening in those fields, as well as have a lot of fun, good food, great music, opportunities to just, again, enjoy the family and kind of flash back to that good old county fair type of environment.
And I think it also, I would hope, awakens some people to the fact that, okay, there were people doing agriculture and raising cows and whatever in the past, but they're still doing it.
That's really our overarching approach is, you know, there's not too many people, if you say, come on out and learn all about agriculture and how it's still impacting your life, it might be hard to get them to do that. But when you say, we've got all these great things and carnivals and music and food, they come out. And then once we get them there, we try to take advantage of the opportunity to say, here's what's happening. Here's where this is still impacting your life. Here's why it's still important to support agriculture and Western activities and ranching it's something that most people don't think about the impact it still has.
This seems relevant in a weird way. You probably haven't heard of it, but the New York Times bureau chief in Beijing once came home and his daughter was crying, and he said, "Well, why are you crying?" And she had just learned, she was like 9 or something, and she had just realized for the first time, because in China in those days, the markets, you had meat, you know, dead carcasses out there, and you picked which part you want out on the street. So she learned for the first time that when she ate meat, that an animal died, because she knew meat came from a cow, but so did milk.
Sure.
And she had no idea. And that, to me, is the extreme opposite of what we're talking about. But what will be some of the events that people might witness?
We're going to have multiple days of rodeo again this year. Actually, we are starting trying something new to provide more opportunity for people to come out and experience the rodeo, because Friday, Saturday nights, we still get to capacity. We have people waiting in line, unable to get in. So we're actually going to do a Sunday performance this year. People can come out and have an opportunity mid-afternoon to hopefully get into the rodeo if they weren't able to make it Friday and Saturday. We're going to have, again, concerts multiple nights, lots of local entertainment. The exhibits, you know, handmade opportunities to see quilts, art, gardening, I think there's almost 1,100 different categories that you can enter something in through either our 4-H Red Barn or the Veterans Building, which is the open exhibits for anybody that resides in one of the 11 counties that is eligible to participate in our
event. If I go out there tomorrow, or not tomorrow, but when it's on, can I see the different entries in those categories?
Sure. Yes, sir. We'll have those on display. You can walk through. You can see the best of show pumpkin or the blue ribbon photograph or a quilt or poster, whatever it is. We also have school exhibits. Approximately 30 of the local schools will give them a theme for the year, and so they'll decorate a space as a classroom, and we award recognition and prizes for those as well.
Got to let Walt segue to another quilt subject.
Quilt, yeah. No, we have a – thank you very much, Peter. We do happen to have our own quilt that was donated to us by Leland Kane, K-I-E-H-N-E. Keeney? Kane. Anyway, it's a lovely quilt that we have on raffle here at KTEL. And we mentioned earlier our celebration, our anniversary celebration. We're going to pick the winner during that event.
It's a raffle. How can people buy a ticket, whatever?
Right now, they're going to have to come by here. I don't think they're available online.
Okay. But I think that's right.
We are going to be out at different events at the farmer's market and things like that. And
we're still at 121 Wyatt Drive, Space 9. That's right. All the way in the back on
that's
the left.
Right. That's right.
Sorry, John, I interrupted you.
One time I was out at Southern New Mexico State Fair, Travis, there were these antique farm machines, and there was a steam engine that was about the size of a dining room table. It stood maybe 5 feet tall. And they cranked that up, and there was a flywheel, and you would just attach something to a thresher or something to this machine that would power it before farms had electricity.
And those displays are still there. That is a local group that puts that on. And they still have a lot of those antique tractors. They put them out on display. They have that. They call it a grist mill that they set up, and they have demonstrations that the community can come out and watch. And they'll even, I think they have one that you can sign up or you can just you can participate in that allows you to weave twine and make a rope or do something along those lines. But yes, all those types of activities are still out there and been going on for many years.
So John, every time we have a milestone anniversary like this, people pay more attention to history. They want to learn more about it. Mm-hmm. Beyond what you're doing out at the fairgrounds, can you talk about some of the other ways that the Historical Society is taking advantage of this opportunity and letting people know a little bit more about the history of our country?
Yeah, well, we'll have a lecture series this fall. We have a normal lecture series every Thursday, the third Thursday of the month, where we have people come in, talk about local history. But we're going to do a noontime lecture series this fall, and it'll probably extend into spring, because our idea is that this isn't just a one-day July 4th event. Mm-hmm. This is an anniversary year. So we'll have people talking about different aspects of the revolution. Some of the lectures will be about the different battlefields in the East Coast, how the Declaration was written, what the Constitution has in the Constitutional Convention. There's a geographer who we've been talking to about what the Rio Grande was in 1776. Mm. And also We've been talking with an Apache scholar about what independence means to him,
right.
And we hope we can schedule him to have one of these noontime lectures at the Brandon Cultural Center.
One of my favorite lines about history is it gets written by the winners. And one of my favorite books was Lies My Teacher Told Me, where he talks mm-hmm. about the using words like settled, and when people had been living there before, they mm-hmm. just weren't Europeans.
And discovered.
Discovered is another one, exactly. So I guess as a historian, there are so many things that we get wrong, that these misconceptions that have been built up, myths and mythology built up over, you know, hundreds of years. Are there any one or two of those that kind of general conventional wisdom things that we don't have right, or that you think are a little bit off target from what we think about when we think about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and everything that happened back then?
Well, I think it's safe to say that George Washington maybe lied once in a while.
Did he really chop down the cherry tree?
Did he really chop down the cherry tree?
I've seen the Potomac, and I seriously doubt he threw a rock or whatever it was across it. Yeah, because that's at least the part that I saw. That was pretty good size. So.
But what he did that was almost as miraculous as walk away twice.
Walk away, yeah. He could have easily become a king.
Yep.
With what he did during the war, the Continental Army was against the biggest military force mm-hmm. in the world fighting against England, and here was this ragtag group. I mean, at the surrender at Yorktown,
unlike the Vietnamese against the U.S.
Yeah. But the soldiers, the English soldiers, were so dismissive when they surrendered, because here were these, I mean, the Patriots had clothes that were barely hanging on them.
Right.
I mean, this was not a well-funded military.
Right.
And what George Washington's, I think, partly his genius was, besides walking away from being crowned king, which some people wanted to do, was that he just needed to keep the army in the field. Didn't have too many victories. Not maybe at Saratoga, a few other places. Didn't have, but he just needed to avoid a defeat. Which he did and this is something else that I think is not well recognized, is that the French contributed mm-hmm. an incredible.
They
maybe were 4,000 soldiers here. They had their fleet come in at
not
different
because
times.
They were kind.
and they also gave ammunition and funding. So they, if it wasn't for the French, the colonists maybe wouldn't have won the war.
I want to turn back to our conversation a moment ago. I certainly think that there are a lot of benefits to growing up with the agricultural real background. You did, and you work with kids who do. I'm assuming you agree, but can you articulate to folks out there who may never have been on a farm, what are the benefits you get from growing up that way?
I think the benefits are the learning work ethic, responsibility. I'm a firm believer that those characteristics, those values are taught in a variety of different ways. They're taught a certain way in agriculture, and perhaps in some instances may be easy to provide those lessons when you're in an agriculture environment, just because you tend to be up early and you
and especially, if you don't do your job, something
correct,
dies.
Right. That, there's that potential. And still in a lot of agricultural families today, it's not happening in town with a lot of neighbors and support. You are, as a family, a lot of times you're out there, and it's you and the people that live with you that are the company. And so you have to work together, and you have to learn some self-sufficiency. But, you know, I think those values are taught lots of places. There's lots of people that don't grow up in an agriculture environment that have strong moral character, mm-hmm. that learn the value of hard work, that are dedicated to their community. And that's, you know, 4-H FFA, that's where we focus on our youth who are involved in agriculture. But it's not really about showing animals. It's not about winning ribbons. It's about positive youth development. And that's the focus of what we do. And that's really our primary reason for the fair. That's still our core mm-hmm. mission. But, again, in order to continue to exist for 60 years and have the community support and be able to do the things that we want to do in that arena, we have to also provide an environment that people want to come out, want to support our organization. And so that's what the fair part is. And also to expose people to that. But yeah, you know, you learn to get up early. You learn to work hard. You learn that sometimes you don't get paid for your work until an animal is sold or the project is completed. You know, just as a general rule, you still taught to respect others and try to have just a good positive outlook on life and the community that you're a part of. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know it was an awful long time ago, but to me this feels a little, the 250 feels different than the 200 in 1976. Obviously a very different era, but it seemed like it was just more universally celebratory back then. I mean, do you kind of agree with that, or?
Yeah, I was alive, and I was actually a young man in 1976, and I thought, how am I going to celebrate the bicentennial? This is before I became a historian. I was actually a street performer.
Okay,
I was a juggler, and so
we've got some opportunities. yeah, we'll talk afterwards. You know, we're always looking for good entertainment.
Well, and I thought, well, I was living in Santa Fe at the time. I thought, well, I'll juggle from Santa Fe to Albuquerque walking, wow. And I did that. I can't do that now.
That's amazing.
It was a lot of fun, and it was my idea just to celebrate our the founding of our country 50 years ago. I'm sure that some people are being inspired to do wacky things like that, but it's a different time. And also, I think because we were just coming out of Watergate and mm-hmm. the Vietnam War, it was a time for people to say, "Hey, let's celebrate what's." I mean, that we've had a lot of bad news. Let's celebrate what's good about the country.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think this is probably an impolite question, but are you finding that people are less enthusiastic because of how they feel about Washington these days, whatever their feelings may be?
There's a lot of negativity about that, but we've had the Doñana County Historical Society has had tables at the Frontier Fair in Mesilla and places like that. And I just people might not like history, maybe mm-hmm. because of how it's taught in high school, mm-hmm. but they love the past. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and if you and you know they'll walk past the booth unless you have something there that brings them in, and then they'll say, oh yeah, I'll tell you about this, you know, my grandparents or when I was in the Vietnam War or something like that. We will have one of our board members who's going to be out there at this celebration does find a grave. So if somebody's mm-hmm. out there wondering where their ancestor is buried, there's a really nice website that Sal can just bring up on his phone and help you find the grave of an ancestor. That's one of the things that we'll do out there. And also, I have a box of postcards that I've collected from around the world. And if you ask us a question that stumps us, you get to get a postcard. Just pick it.
Nice.
You know, one thing I've just reflect on in general related to somewhat of that question is I think sometimes we get caught up in where we are, our point in space and time and our generation and how we view things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly during the Vietnam War, there was a lot of I wasn't around, but it seems like there was a lot of probably people in our country who did not see eye to eye, who thought there was a lot of disagreement, you know,
a lot of even protests.
Yeah, even going back to what you said, you know, earlier about the two-party system, essentially from your description, we started this country with a two-party system. We had the loyalists and we had the revolutionaries. Yeah. I mean, that was really, mm-hmm. and the people in the middle that were trying to decide what was the best way. And so You know, I think that a lot of times it's just same thing, a different format, a different setting, and I think it's easy to get caught up in. It's different now than it was for people before, but you know, probably going back through history, there's always been conflict and times, and hope. And I think, you know, just the general folks still seem to be very much dedicated to our values as a country and to what we stand for, and you know, there's probably always going to be that disagreement. I'm sure the people that back in 1776 that thought we should stay under English rule were very adamant about that. Mm-hmm. You know, when they were talking to the others. So, yeah. But certainly, you know, it's something that we have we live in the present, and we have a tendency. And I love your quote about may not like the way history's taught, but love to talk about the past. I think that is very, very true.
To learn on their own, yep. And they like to learn about history, but they don't. I don't trust what I. Which brings me to a question I have for you. Last week when we were talking about Juneteenth, and the story I was told around Juneteenth was that it took 2 years for the message of the Emancipation Proclamation to get to Galveston, Texas. Mm-hmm. It seems more likely to me that they knew about it. It just took 2 years for the Army to send somebody down there to make them enforce it. Am I wrong?
Or to make it official.
Okay.
Maybe make it official.
But it wasn't that they didn't know about it.
I don't know. I don't know, Walt. You know,
I'm just distrustful.
You know, it's
inquisitive. Just looking for the facts. Yeah.
You know, things aren't instantaneous as we are accustomed to now. I mean, it took a while to travel, even by boat, from the East Coast to there. But also, there were some people in Texas that didn't want that.
Oh, sure.
That to be known either.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
What do you, more about the Historical Society locally? What do you guys do? What should people know about in the way of either places to visit locally themselves, or how they can learn what you're doing and maybe attend a meeting if they're interested in trying to help preserve local history?
Well, we have a website, and just type in Doñana County Historical Society, and you'll get to our website and see what our current activities are. Besides the lecture series, both are normal ones that are on the third Thursday of a month, and those will be at the Brannigan Cultural Center at 7 o'clock, and the noontime ones, and we don't quite have that schedule yet. The field trip that we're working on this fall is to go to the Trinity site, which the first atomic bomb exploded, and that's, I think, either the third or the last Saturday in October. I forget when it's open. It's only open once a year to the public.
And closed last year because of the government shutdown.
Which
we may have again.
We also give out awards. We give out awards for somebody who's written a historical book a historical article that we think is worthwhile. We have a Southern New Mexico Historical Review, our own annual publication, we'd like to invite anybody who was working on writing something about local history. And it's just New Mexico history or Northern Mexico history to submit an article to that. We give out awards to people who are preserving historic buildings and historic traditions. And so we give those awards out annually. Let me think what else. We're a group of people that just have a lot of fun working with the past.
Can I ask you a little bit about the historic preservation parts, specifically the buildings?
Mm-hmm.
I first moved here in 2002, and people were still lamenting the racetrack and the removal of St. John's Church. And ever since then, it seems like it's been a real struggle against the people who want to come in and tear everything down and build up something new and shiny. Mm-hmm. I know recently I was at an event for the Community Foundation there in the old Amador House, mm-hmm. and they said they reached a point where the owners of that house were ready to say, we're going to just sell it to CVS and let them tear it down until they came in and got a community effort to be able to buy it. But I know that's something that here in Las Cruces, that's a struggle that's going on all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, historic buildings are part of the not just the infrastructure, but they're part of the skeletal foundation of our community. And it's an insight into, we just drive down a street and look at an old building. And for me, I can look at some of these old buildings that are built out of adobes. And did the adobes come from New Mexico? Well, there was some building with earth and structures in New Mexico with indigenous people. But for me, the adobes that we know actually comes from Spain, mm-hmm. and where the Spanish get them. They came from the Moors, who brought them in from mm-hmm. northern. Where did the Moors get them? Well, they got them from farther from Mesopotamia, mm-hmm. and maybe the tower. And maybe I shouldn't even say this, but maybe the Tower of Babel that collapsed not because of the multiple languages, but they were built out of adobes, and you can't build adobes that high.
Right. structural engineer.
Structural engineer. And so for me, I can look at a building and it just opens up this whole part of our past. And also part of the people who live there. I once did a historic preservation project up in Las Trompas, up in northern New Mexico. Uh-huh. And I said, these buildings, you know, this is and this, all the history. And the people said, this is it, from Las Trompas, they said, this isn't right. The people. You have to talk right. about the people who lived in the buildings.
Yes.
And so we went back and did some oral histories. I mean, that's, you know, it's our lives that are encompassed with this buildings, and not just who's living there now, but past generations.
Yeah.
Trompas is a particularly neat place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
Kind of up on that ridge.
Up in the mountains, northern New Mexico, yeah.
So we're down to our last few minutes. We have about 5 minutes left. What any interesting tidbits or factoids that about the 250th that aren't part of our common knowledge or?
Oh, that's a. Just, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head.
Yeah, put you on the spot.
Well, one I'm going to ask you if I get out there. And try to win the prize, whatever it was, is when Paul Revere did his ride, there was a woman who rode further uh-huh. and said the same things louder. Uh-huh. And who was she?
You get a free postcard. Historic postcard, Peter. You already get it.
Who was she? Because I knew about William Dawes.
I'll have to look it up because okay. I read that and then I didn't keep.
But yeah. here's what I've always thought about mind, that. Did Paul Revere get all the credit for that just because his name rides with here?
I think because of the poem.
Yeah, that's
the
what poem. I mean.
The poem.
But there were three. There were actually four because there was that mm-hmm. woman too. And there were two other, Dawes and I forget the other guy's name, and Paul Revere. And that spread like wildfire. And then what happened is when the gunfire started, all of the surrounding Minutemen grabbed their guns. And came. I mean,
yes.
And it was just the sound of the battle yep. that attracted a lot of the Minutemen.
Let's use a little bit of our last 2 minutes to have you guys go back and tell people what you said at the beginning about when, what hours, where is the county's celebration of the 250th.
It's going to be June 30th through July 2nd. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. It'll be at the fairgrounds about 12 miles west of town. And it starts at 4 p.m. daily. We'll go to 10 p.m. on June 30th and July 1st, and then till midnight on July 2nd. There'll be a drone show every night, entertainment, lots of activities, just a good family community event.
What time will the drone show
drone show is going to take place roughly about 9:30 each night.
And one other question, because we talk about, I mean, I know where I've known for 50 years where the fairgrounds was, but if people are actually driving out there, what exit do they take?
They're going to take the airport exit. If that one is backed up, which we hope maybe it will be based on the number of people showing up, well, then you can take the go on past and take the Corralitos exit. I believe it's exit 132 and 127.
The Corralitos, and then come
and
back.
come back around and kind of on come the in the back way. Okay. Correct. Yeah.
And it's open to the public.
That's right. It's going to be fantastic. We're very excited about the participation by the Historical Society and looking forward to just a great event.
Well, thank you both, John Hunter and Travis Brown, and maybe we'll see you out there.